The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good thing is there are many cities throughout the country with affordable properties, many even under 100,000. Starting on November 1st, I will be hosting a four-week intensive virtual workshop that's going to teach you how to buy your first out-of-state investment property. We're going to talk about how to find the right location, how to build a team you can trust, creative financing, finding and analyzing properties, and so much more. You deserve to invest in real estate. You deserve to build wealth for your family. It's simply a matter of having the right information. I definitely want to see you there. So if you're interested, go to outofstatemoney.com/workshop, and I look forward to seeing you there.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Investors Spotlight, featuring episode number 178 with Nick McGrew from Polymath Legal. Nick's going to talk about the power of syndication in real estate investing. This is amazing. So without any further ado, let's get into it. The Black Real Estate Dialogue Investor Spotlight, episode 178 with Nick McGrew. Let's go.
The next thing I want to talk about is syndications. So syndications, we've had like a variety of people come on the show who have groups and syndications and things of that nature. And one of the things that I think is important is like transparency, especially because syndications is like within our community, it's not really something many of us have had exposure to. It's very new for a lot of us. So I'm glad we were able to have people to be able to speak to that. For somebody who's like brand new to investing, would you recommend starting on the syndication level or doing something smaller? What's your take on that?
So I'll give the caveat. This is not even a legal opinion. This is just more of a personal opinion. But I like syndication. One, it's more of what my clients are doing, so I'm just around it a lot more. But I also like it more because, you know, I've talked about before how things don't go perfect. Well, with syndication, you obviously there's more things going happening, so there's a lot more opportunity for things to go wrong. Mm-hmm. But you also have a lot more opportunity to kind of save those things that are going wrong. Because mm-hmm. if I have a fourplex and one tenant's gone, now 25% of my rent is gone, for at least for the month or two or until I get re-rented. If I've got a 400 unit apartment building, if one person's gone, that's not really going to be meaningful at all to the bottom line. And so you've got a little bit more wiggle room or just ways to kind of correct things when they're going wrong. But with that also, you are taking on more risk just because you got 400 people instead of four people coming to the building. So that's 400 sinks, 400 toilets, 400 guests that are, you know, going to mess up whatever. So there is more risk into it, but I think that it allows for a lot more wiggle room and maneuvering when those kind of negative things might occur on the property.
Definitely. That makes sense. And for those who maybe are not so familiar with the terminology, can you at a basic level explain like what the setup of a syndication is?
Yeah, so syndication, if we think about, you know, group economics, that's group economics on steroids. I say I want to buy or build an apartment building. It's going to cost me $50 million. I don't have that. With syndication, I don't need that because essentially I can raise that capital. And now we often would call me, if I'm the one running the deal in the industry, we called me the GP or the manager. And then you would be the passive investor, so the LP or the limited partner. And so with that, I can raise the capital from the limited partners. They're bringing typically going to bring the most or all of the money, but I'm bringing the sweat equity. So I'm going to split those profits with you, and I'll tell you in advance how we're going to split it. And as I do the work and the property starts bringing in money, when I say, hey, we're doing well, we paid all of our expenses, we've got some extra cash, let's spread this out to the owners. I'll split some of it with the investors, and I'll take some for myself or my management team as well. And so we're all growing with that property as it hopefully performs how we're planning to. So yeah, it's basically us pooling all of our capital together. And so the cool thing that I like about syndication is that I work in it typically in the context of real estate, but it really can be used in almost anything you're trying to raise capital for and group money together, you could do that. So on higher levels, even banks, when you have like a $1 billion development, banks are actually syndicating the financing of that. You know, one bank might say I've got 100 million, another one might say I've got 500, I've got 300, and they're coming together to put that loan together for the developer, but they're syndicating the money to bring that loan together. Even basketball teams can be bought with syndication. The first syndication that I did was for a movie. So somebody had a script and they said, hey, I need 800 grand to make this movie. And so we set up a syndication there. So I like syndication just because I hear about it and work about it in the context of real estate. But really, whatever project you have, syndication can be a way to get the capital that you need for it.
That's so crazy. I didn't even think about it in the context of anything else besides like real estate, but it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Like I think with the Hornets, it's like a group that's purchasing Michael Jordan's stake. It's not just one person. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on something else that I've seen that people have had challenges with is investing with people who don't have any skin in the game. So they don't have a cent of their own money into the deal. What do you think about that? What's your take on that generally?
I think it would depend on the size of the deal. Because with syndication, it's kind of common. A lot of times the management team might invest a little bit alongside their investors, but it's not uncommon for them to not invest. But what they are doing is they're probably giving the personal guarantee on the loan. Because typically with syndication, you're not syndicating the whole whole purchase. You're syndicating the equity piece that you can't get a loan on. And so the management team, one, they're staking their reputation. They are typically giving a personal guarantee on the loan. And a lot of times they will invest, but if they don't for like a larger syndication, that wouldn't be a big red flag for me. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're talking about, like a fourplex or a flip or something like that, that'd be something where I'd say, hey, you need to get in this as well. Because again, it's smaller. So if things go wrong, there's less maneuverability. So that would, for my personal investing. So yeah, a smaller deal, I'd want you to definitely be in, but a larger deal, it wouldn't be deal breaker. Deal breaker for me.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you mentioned on the syndication side, the fact that if someone is not maybe contributing financially, they have something on the line, reputation or personally guaranteeing the loan, so if something goes wrong, I mean, it is kind of a ding for them, which wouldn't be great. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it, especially for somebody who maybe this is like your first deal, which is probably gonna be like on a smaller scale, like maybe small multifamily or single family or flip or something, probably gives you a bit more peace of mind knowing that somebody is at least contributing something to it. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, if it all goes bad, you're not the only one losing. If that makes sense, especially if they're the one raising it and things like that. It's my personal opinion too.
Yeah, and particularly again, if you don't have any say about those things going bad decisions that brought you there too.
Definitely. So how do you recommend people vet the individual who is like, raising the money for a real estate deal? How do people know who they should trust? Like what type of questions should they ask just about them in general, even outside of the deal, to make sure like, hey, is this somebody who I really can trust, who I want to give my money to and believe in what they're presenting? What's your recommendation about that? And just trying to discern if it's a good person.
Yeah. So one, talk with them, call them and kind of see, how responsive are they? Because if they're not very responsive when they don't have your money, they're probably not going to change that. So that's going to be the first one is that, as I'm vetting them, I want to know how responsive they are, because if I can't get a hold of them to ask them my questions now, I don't want to be in a situation where they have my money and I can't get a hold of them.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that you can do. Another thing is I would ask them, what are the past deals they've done? So I want to look at their track record and see what have they been successful in? What are some deals also that didn't go well? And what did you do to course correct, or how did you remedy that? I would also probably ask them if I could contact some of their past investors. And I'd kind of ask those investors the same thing. You know, were they responsive? Were there deals that went bad? Did they communicate clearly and transparently? Another thing, if it is a syndication, now there's lots of different. So with syndication, you're selling a security. And so there's lots of exemptions from security registration. One of the big ones in real estate, though, is called Regulation D. Mm-hmm. And so with that one, you don't have to do a whole full-on registration like a public company, but there are some things you have to file. And one of them is called Form D, which is basically just information. So it says who the issuer is, how much they're raising, how much of the raise are they taking for themselves? Because a lot of times those issuers will take fees. And so it has kind of just that general information. And so I would look, and that's available publicly. So the SEC has a database called EDGAR, and you can look at the Form Ds on there. So if somebody's coming to me with a syndication and they're saying, yeah, we're doing a Reg D exemption, I'm going to look up their Form D, because this again is another thing that indicates to me, are they crossing their T's and dotting their I's? Because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't do that. And so if they say, hey, yeah, I've got a syndication, we're doing Reg D, and I say, great, send me your stuff and I'll kind of look into it. As I'm looking into it, if I see that they haven't filed the Form D, I'm probably not going to invest with them, or at the very least, I'm going to ask them and say, hey, when are you planning to file that? Have you started raising capital yet? What's going on with that? And if they're like, what do you mean Form D? Then to me, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm not going to go there. Because that's something that you're required to do. And again, it shows me that maybe you don't necessarily know all the things you're supposed to be doing and all the regulations and hoops that you should be jumping through. And so I don't want my money tied up in litigation because another investor's upset that you didn't do something right. And so yeah. That's another thing that you can do to vet some of them as well.
Definitely. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of times people get so anxious and they feel like they're missing out. So like I was talking to somebody the other day and they basically told me like, hey, I'm desperate. I want to invest. Like I'm desperate. And it's like, you shouldn't be investing a cent if you're desperate. That's the completely mm-hmm. wrong thing to do. And with desperation, you're not going to do that due diligence. With desperation, you're just going to hand your money over and hope it works out. And there's plenty of people who will take your money and who knows what'll happen with it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really glad you mentioned just like calling the person, just trying to understand what they've done, look at their past deals and things of that nature. And I mean, if someone's not willing to, one, communicate with somebody who's giving them money or be transparent about past deals and things of that nature, you should run fast as you can, in my opinion.
Yeah, you hit on a good thing. People get investment FOMO. And I'm like, just take that FOMO and keep your money, though. Like, feel the FOMO, but yeah. Keep your money and say, look, let me look at this deal and watch this deal so that when the next one comes, I'll have a little bit more information and maybe I'll be ready for that mm-hmm. one. But yeah, there's no need to rush. Obviously, we say, you know, the sooner you start investing, the better. But it's not helpful for you to invest early into something that's really bad that you haven't vetted. So
thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.